Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, fellow Otherworld Explorers. I am Hercules Invictus of the Olympian Archony. Welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods, my ongoing exploration of the celestial forces that shape, guide, and are still actively engaged with evolving life here on Gaia. Tonight, I'm proud to bring you the Disclosure Network podcast with Nick Curto, founder of DNNY, or New York Disclosure Network. Welcome, Nick. How are you on this wonderful day? Hello, Nick.
Okay. Yeah. I'm right here.
How are you on this wonderful day?
Oh, excellent, excellent. It was a beautiful day in Manhattan. I probably think the same was holding true of your neck of the woods in New Jersey. Sunny and a little sneak preview of spring. Would you not agree?
Yes, I would agree. Today had hints of something better coming soon.
Oh, and it can't come soon enough, my friend. Can't come soon enough. Well, boy, gray days, dull, dark gray days really play, I think, on everybody. You just feel a little more depressed, a little sluggish. Do you not agree with that? It really impacts upon your mood?
Yes, it certainly does. We're very much connected with our local weather, and sunniness or the cloudiness of the day surely impacts people's moods and their experiences of the life they're living.
Absolutely does. Absolutely does.
I always look forward to your programs, and I'm looking forward to today. Today is a continuation of past episodes. This is a conversation that's been going on, so I'm looking forward to see it pick up, and let's see where it takes us today.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And as you all know, the program is Disclosure Network with Nick Curto, and I'm Nick Curto, co-founder and director of Disclosure Network New York. DNNY is a grassroots organization. We're now celebrating our 25th year of providing two meetings per month throughout the year in Manhattan. I can't believe it's been 25 years, but it has been that. And it's been an extraordinary ride, I think, for everybody who's a member of our group. We focus on cutting-edge UFO ET issues, paranormal phenomenon of all kinds, and it's amazing what that involves, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of sources, and we go very deep into these exciting and sometimes misunderstood subjects that the mainstream press will not talk about or ever even disclose. Our members, wonderful members, do intensive investigative research into these various areas, cutting-edge topics all the way, and we share that information with each other at our meetings and also with our following on the internet itself. We are currently doing a Zoom meeting the third Thursday of each month from 7:30 to 9 p.m. That's Eastern Time, and that's throughout 2024. And that is for our members. We also have a face-to-face meeting, a big meeting, and that's located in the West Village of New York City at a wonderful place called The Center at 208 West 13th Street. And that's always the first Sunday of each month from 2:30 to 4 p.m. It's an extraordinary 90 minutes. And we invite wonderful speakers who have authored awesome books to do presentations for our group. As well as we have sometimes DNNY town meetings where we select a particular subject for that month, and we have an open discussion. And those are also amazing, amazing discussions, and everybody is invited to participate in that. Now at 4 o'clock, when our 90-minute meeting is over, everyone's invited to go to a coffee shop one block away, where we can then talk about what's on our minds and also get to meet new people and talk to old friends that have been at the meeting. So that's also a wonderful thing we do. That's directly after the meeting at 4 p.m. Now, in fact, we have a meeting this coming Sunday, tomorrow. I'm looking very much forward to that. Our motto, and from day one, was, quote, connecting the dots to seek truth, unquote. We have available to everyone worldwide the DNN-wide news blast service, and that's a daily service of talking about special interest news, and that is dynamite, and it's open to all the membership of our group. If you want to have information about our membership, we'd love you to write in, and we'll send you that detailed information. I'm going to give you an email. It's my personal email address to do that. So if you have a pen and a piece of paper, and I'll go slowly so you'll get it. Okay, here we go. The email address is NICKNYNY1. And the one is the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it. NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com. The membership for one solid year is $36. And that also means that when we have meetings every month, our members pay only $10 as opposed to the $15 fee at the door for non-members. So you can see that that's a very, very good, worthwhile investment, and you're supporting our group. And we certainly hope that you'll consider joining. And that's worldwide. We have a membership worldwide. Our website is www.dnny.info. Again, dnny.info. Okay, with that said, we're going to talk to our featured guest for this podcast program for February 2024 for the Disclosure Network New York podcast. A very warm welcome to my good friend and colleague, Bruce Cornett. Great to have you on the program, Bruce.
Thank you, Nick, for having me.
Really looking forward to tonight's subject matter. And for you've chosen the subject that I think many people, including myself, are very, very interested in, and that is past lives and regression. Wonderful subject with lots of fascinating areas there. So please, Bruce, if you will, get us started and tell us a little bit about you and your personal life and relationship to past lives.
Okay. In my previous time here on this show with you, I talked about my late wife, Bonnie Lee Cornett, who died at age 40 and came back to me after she died and communicated with me for more than 7 years in the spirit realm, and told me a lot of things about who she was and why she had come to Earth, etc. And I recommend that anybody interested in that go to that session that was recorded and is available on Hercules Invictus and on your DDNY show. But this show is about what I discovered in 1993. By accident, that was my curiosity in the subject, and my wife, I had a friend who was involved in the psychic phenomena of past lives and invited us to her house, and I'm going to get into that subject more detail, but I would like to educate the audience a little bit about this. Research in this area was pioneered by Dr. I.N. Stevenson, a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia School of Medicine, who spent much of his career collecting and examining such cases of past lives in children, typically between the age of 2 and 4, with a mean age of 35 months. Such children started talking about their previous life, often speaking about the events that led up to their death, and sometimes using the present tense as if their previous life was still continuing. In some cases, Stevenson was able to identify the person the child claimed to be and to verify the information, speaking to relatives of the deceased. Now, In my case, I did not have any recollection of previous past lives when I was in my childhood. But in 1993, I was, 50 years old, and I went along with my wife to her friend, Carola Van Dusen, and that was a most interesting, it was extraordinary what I discovered. I didn't even know that I could be hypnotized in regressive hypnosis. And I would like to read right here the account of what happened so that I get every detail involved. In the spring of 1993, Carola Van Dusen told Pat, my wife, that she was holding a group hypnotic past life regression session at her house on the shoreline of Keyport, New Jersey. I was curious and a little apprehensive about being hypnotized, since I had never been hypnotized to my knowledge before, even though my late wife Bonnie was a skilled hypnotist. And that is very interesting. She was in the business of hypnotizing people, and when she was alive, and taking care of their habits, smoking habits, drinking habits, and other behavioral problems. We drove to Carola's house, and we joined a small group in one of Carola's large side rooms to a large Victorian-style house. Carola had laid out large pillows on the floor so we could all lay down on her soft rug with a pillow under our heads. She led us through a period of relaxation with more and more suggestions to go back in time in our lives. Then she told us to go even further back, before our current lifetime. I recall being surprised that I recalled places I had never been to as an adult in this lifetime, and found myself in a familiar house with turn-of-the-century, 19th-century furniture and wall decorations. I had no clue to who I had been, but my surroundings were very familiar. The thought of being in the White House came to mind. Then Carola told us, if we are having trouble figuring out who we were, to look in a mirror. I seem to have known where to find a mirror in a nearby restroom. I then found myself looking at the image in the mirror. I did not recognize who I saw. Imagine that. Who is this person I'm looking at? I studied his face carefully. Then the regression session was over, and Pat, my wife, asked me how it went. I told her that I may have been in the White House, and I saw my image in a mirror. She said, we need to purchase a book on presidents, which we did. Looking through that book, I came upon a picture of Woodrow Wilson. I immediately recognized it as the face that I had seen in the mirror in the White House.
Whoa.
That began a several-year study of Wilson, whose life and mine contained many similarities in places we had lived and worked, and feelings of predestination. I got the thought that had we been living at the same time, our paths would have crossed many times. And I'll get into this in a little bit as to why I ended up in this body with this predestination of my life as a paleontologist, as a geologist. Places that both Wilson and I had been to or worked at were Staunton, Virginia, Washington, D.C., Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, Princeton University, Trenton, New Jersey, Long Branch, Red Bank, New Jersey, and Wesleyan University in Connecticut. Then in 2000, I got an email from an astrologer named Angel Starr. She said that her spirit guide told her to contact me. She didn't know who I was, but she was able to find my email address. and wrote me an email. And she was told to give me information and the confirmation that I was seeking. She began her letter by telling me how Chuck Marzi, Bonnie's youngest son, had died on 18 November 1991 in Pasadena, Texas. She told me how he died and the injuries he had sustained in a head-on car crash as he drove to school in the fog. Only family members and medical personnel knew how he died. So her information was privileged knowledge that told the Angel Stars source was higher than public knowledge. Then Angel Star said, "You were Woodrow Wilson." Oh, my God.
Oh.
After that, she said, "And you were also John the Fisherman." I realized
wow.
there were Johns who were fishermen in the New Testament, John the Baptist and John the Beloved. I have since had a past life regression that indicates I was one of them. So that is a shocking revelation right there. I mean, I had no clue. It wasn't until 2014 that I discovered that Angel Star was Joan Cecil Quigley, the personal astrologer of Nancy Reagan. She died at age 87 on 23 October 2014, and her nom de plume was Angel Star, giving her message 14 years earlier credibility. But I wasn't completely convinced I had been Woodrow Wilson, and I was even less convinced that I was John the Fisherman. Then in 2001, Lisa Stem, a psychic similar to John Edwards, came to me on the internet when the spirit of my late wife, Bonnie, and her late son, Chucky, contacted her and wanted her to reach out to me. I already knew that I was somehow connected to Woodrow Wilson in a past life, but I did not have anything more than to go on than an impression and past life regression where I found myself in the White House during World War I, anguishing over sending Americans into a war, and saw my reflection in a mirror. Lisa gave me more details that seemed to confirm this connection. Okay. Here we have a reflection from here, from Star Bear, which was, wrote me an email concerning Leslie Anderson, the abductee who knows Honora aboard the Caledonian ships, told me the name of their people and said that they came from M13 star system, which is in the Hercules constellation. Appropriately, in my previous session with you, I told you about this, about discovering my children my late wife's spirit introduced me to, who had been born to her when at least 14 months before I first met Bonnie. And Lisa goes on with a number of different things about my previous lifetime. She said that the impression I have of who I was at Pearl Harbor was a Navy seaman, first class, who had recently graduated from training and was assigned to one of the battleships. "I do not know which one," I said. "Perhaps it was had started with the letter H or I. You gave us a clue. Based on when I died in my previous lifetime, 3 February 1924, as Woodrow Wilson, I could not have been older than 17 and probably lied about my age in order to enlist. Lisa, maybe it was the USS Iowa. Don't know, but I get the name Calvin. I respond, very possible. Strikes a chord. Perhaps he came from Florida. Ironically, my wife Pat recovered her last lifetime as a Japanese woman living in Nagasaki. She died in the atomic blast. And here we are together as a husband and wife. Now that is a most unusual thing. I died at Pearl Harbor, and she died at the end of World War II in an atomic blast. How many people have ended up finding out that? And that is very bizarre. Choosing that lifetime was my way of atonement for sending thousands of Americans to war and their deaths during World War I. I am reluctant to tell you too much because I want to see if you can pick up any additional information that would help me confirm who I was. This is, I'm talking to Lisa. But I will give you some clues. I was born on 28 December 1856 in Staunton, Virginia, and lived through. Remember, I kept asking you about something in December around Christmas, Lisa said. I responded, yes, 28 December was very important to him since it was so close to Christmas. French President Georges Clemenceau said of him in 1919, he thinks he's another Jesus Christ come upon earth to reform man. That statement is more relevant than you might think. Lisa, I am still getting a connection with the Carolinas. Maybe your parents lived there, but you did live there some part of your life. I responded, his biography states, having learned the basics at home, from his parents, he, at 12, attended the school of Charles Heywood Barnwell in Columbia, South Carolina. In 1873, he entered Davidson College, but poor health forced him to drop out at the end of his freshman year. His father, Joseph, was a pastor of Presbyterian churches in Staunton, Virginia, Augusta, Georgia, and Wilmington, North Carolina. Lisa, Edwards is still around you. Maybe he is the commander or the colonel, but I get a working connection. Maybe it was in the other lifetime you spoke about. I'm also picking up the military around you. There, I got it. You were a commander or on some very high level of authority. And I responded, Commander-in-Chief, 20th President of the United States, nominated on the 28th ballot in 1912 election. What's important about Wilson is that he felt that his special magic number was number 28, the day in December of his birth. And because a lot of things happened, for example, he did not get married until he was 28 years old. He was nominated on the ballot for governor of New Jersey on the 28th ballot, and he became the 28th president of the United States. Lisa, the colonel is an Edward who worked with you and played an important role. I responded, from Wilson's biography, in 1879, he entered the University of Virginia Law School, but dropped out, again for health reasons. In his second year, he was bored with legal study, pursuing it only as a means to enter politics, preferred extracurricular activities at the Charlestonville campus. He was president of the Jefferson Literary Society Debate Club. While recuperating at home in Wilmington, North Carolina, Wilson continued to study law on his own and was admitted to the bar in October 1882. He settled briefly in Atlanta, where he practiced law in partnership with Edward I. Rennick. In 1883, he decided to give up law, and he thought his dream of a political career was over, and he wanted to become an educator. He enrolled as a graduate student in Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, where he earned his PhD in political science in 1886. I earned my PhD in this lifetime in geology and paleontology. What I find fascinating is that his first assignment, teaching assignment, was at the Bryn Mawr College for Women in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And I was born in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. Lisa, you were married twice. Damn, another E. Maybe both add the letter E. I responded, my first wife, as Woodrow Wilson, was Ellen Louise Axon, Savannah, Georgia. Married on 24 June, 1885. Second wife, Edith Bowling Galt, a widow. Married on 18 December, 1915. Lisa, you have a lot of M's around you and maybe W's if you turn the M upside down, because this letter is so strong, I think it can be the W too. Obviously, Woodrow Wilson has two W's. I responded, do these M's and W's refer to people or to things? The thought of Mary Magdalene comes to mind because Kara, the spirit of my late wife, led me to David Wood's book called Genesis, which is about the Jesus-Mary bloodline and sacred geometry centered about the ancient religion of Egypt. Lisa, I think one of your wives is the E, Ellen or Edith. I suspect since there are so many things you have in common in this lifetime, you may have looked alike. I feel you were wearing glasses. You had a round, a dark hair, round face and dark hair. I did wear glasses and had brown hair, similar to mine today, thin, balding. Note that the mole on the left side of my forehead, Wilson has a mole in the exact same place, and there's another mole on the other side of his head, which I have in that exactly that same place. Lisa, I feel your family were supporters for the South since there is so much Southern background. Interestingly enough, I married Bonnie Lee Marzi, and she became Bonnie Lee Cornett on June 1986. And she almost mentioned that her middle name was Lee, and that she was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and was a Southerner. So this, she was very happy with that characterization. And here we're learning about Woodrow Wilson having been born in Virginia and spending a lot of time in school in Virginia until he came north into Princeton University, where he became the president of that university. From Wilson's biography, Joseph Ruggles Wilson, Woodrow's father, was a staunch supporter of the South during the Civil War. He helped organize the Presbyterian Church of the Confederate States of America. He worked a profound influence in the development of Woodrow Wilson's character and intellect, prodding him on with such aphorisms as, the roast beef of hard industry gives blood for climbing the hills of life. Lisa responded, you said you were in New Jersey for a time at Princeton. I feel you were also a government official of respect. I think maybe this position was a start to a much higher position. And I said, yes, I became the president of Princeton University 1902 to 1910, and then the governor of New Jersey 1911 to 1913. Lisa, anyway, I will look, I'll see what else I can get, but I am growing tired. Mexico comes to mind and doesn't make any sense, but I get the connection somehow. I responded, Wilson's biography states, relations with Mexico, the rapidly shifting forces of the Mexican Revolution brought to power the reactionary Victoriano Huerta in 1913. President Wilson refused to recognize his government and instead adopted a policy of watchful waiting. To answer hawkish critics calling for a U.S. invasion of Mexico, Wilson set forth the mobile doctrine in October 1913 in a speech before the Southern Commercial Congress in Alabama. He declared that the United States never again would acquire territory by conquest. Relations with Mexico continued to deteriorate, however, in the wake of the Tampico incident in April 1914, in which the Mexican authorities arrested U.S. sailors at Tampico. Although the sailors were quickly released, the United States demanded a 21-gun salute to the American flag as an appropriate apology. When Huerta refused, Wilson dispatched Marines to occupy Veracruz. War seemed inevitable, but as the intercession of Argentina, Brazil, and Chile occurred, tempers were cooled off. Well, I'm going to stop there with this article that I wrote concerning my contact with Lisa Stem and her confirmation of that I did have past lives, both as Clive and as Woodrow Wilson, and the significance of them. But one might ask, why did I decide to go into geology and become a paleontologist in this lifetime? Part of the reason was, I remember, is that in my travels up and down the East Coast, especially on railroads and trains, we would be passing through railroad cuts through corners of mountains. And the rocks that I would see were very visible in railroad cars, passenger cars. And when I was at Princeton University, they have a huge museum there, a paleontology and geology museum, in which they have many fossils of animals on exhibit. And then when I also taught at in Connecticut at Wesleyan University, they have large collections of fossils from the Connecticut Valley and dinosaur tracks and fossil fishes. So I got the sense that I wanted to study those more, but my career in politics took over, and I was not able to do that. So in this lifetime, I chose to become a paleontologist in order to satisfy that interest. And that is why I have focused on my PhD in geology.
Bruce, I just want to interject here. It's fascinating how dots can be connected and one thing leads to the next, and then a bright glow that, oh my goodness, there is a connection there, and then you continue on. One of the things I was thinking about when you were speaking of past lives, and some of it was very vivid, is I would, at some point, just as a suggestion, go to places that Wilson, maybe in early life, as a boy or a young man, maybe the family house is still there or other things are still there, and just go to those locations and then just see if anything triggers. Sometimes yeah. Being at a particular place, you know, all of a sudden, I've read other stories similar to what you're saying, where one thing leads to another, and being in a particular place or even smelling a particular scent open up a window of discovery. So I just want to interject and just add that as something to think about.
Yes, that is something that I've thought about wanting to do, and I have visited many of those places. As I said, I've been to Staunton, Virginia, where he was born. I've been to Washington, D.C. many times. I've been to Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, and I was born there. I've been to Princeton University and taken courses at that university. And I've been to Trenton, and where he worked as the governor of New Jersey. And I've been to Long Branch, New Jersey, and Red Bank. I lived in Red Bank for quite a few years. And then I also worked at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. So all of these different places, as I said, that if we had been living at the same time, I get the feeling we would have been bumping into each other. But you're right. I need to go back and solidify some of that. What I didn't realize is that Wilson has written diaries, many diaries of his life, and they're at Princeton University in their library. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they're quite amazing, all of the details in his life. And the one thing that came out in one of his biographies is how superstitious he was about numbers. He was very connected to numbers. And 28 was a magical number. And as we know, as I mentioned before, that would always bring him good luck. My birthday is on the 31st of August, and 138 and 831 are my magic numbers. And if you start looking for those three numbers together, you'll be amazed at how often they pop up, and especially in the in Hollywood movie industry. Also, one of the other things that I did when I was in graduate school is I would be driving down the highway, and my attention would be pulled over to the license plate on the car in front of me or near me, and it would always be one of those three numbers together, 831, 138. And I became curious as to why those numbers keep on popping up. And so a lot of interesting things, even my phone number, the last four digits of my phone number are 1867. Turns out those are that's the birth date of my children by Bonnie before I first met her. And this may be shocking to most people, but how could that be? How could I have children from a woman I have not met? And that was one of the big questions that I wanted to answer. And in our previous interview, in which I talked about how she told me all about these amazing things that were happening to her in her life, how she had been murdered by her first husband and resurrected her body in the morgue. And when she died, she came back in spirit and appeared on camera. And I have a web page out there called The Passion of Bonnie, in which you can see her spirit over her grave. And all of these things were starting to come together in the early 90s. She died in 1991. And then on 1994, on the 11th of October, I took a trip to Atlantic City to be on a public broadcast station show on UFOs. And on my way back to Red Bank, 72 miles to the north, as soon as I got onto the highway, Garden State Parkway, these two ships, alien ships, came up on either side of the highway and started pacing me. And I immediately thought, well, this is outrageous. And telepathically, one of the pilots, a male pilot, spoke to me and said, "We saw your show that was recorded on for television, and we liked what you had to say." This was pretty shocking when you think about it. And I had to stop for a toll booth. And as I stopped, the two ships on either side of the highway stopped and hovered. And then I drove through the toll booth and continued on, and they kept on pacing me all the way up the Garden State Parkway. Then I heard the voice of a female telepathic voice tell the pilot on my right that she was going to take a look at something off in the distance, and suddenly her ship just zipped away and disappeared. And the one on my right continued to pace me. And what is strange, as I have a webpage out there called Garden State Parkway Escort, and
I had a very interesting conversation with that pilot, not knowing who he was or why he had selected me to talk to me. And I was thinking, what is it like to fly one of those ships? Because he was in a smaller ship, a shuttlecraft, and immediately got back the thought, what is it like to drive a car? And so I looked at my steering wheel, my hands on my steering wheel, and at the gauges and speedometer, looked at the foot pedals, et cetera, and the stick shift. I said, this is what it's like to drive a car. You know, I immediately get back his vision, what he's seeing in the flight deck of his UAP. And
wow.
I see two screens in front of me. This is brief. Now, it wasn't for very long, so I wouldn't lose control of the car. And on the left side, I see a distant image of the highway with all the cars on it. This is at night. And on the right, I see a close-up of my truck. So he had some sort of a flying camera that was right to the right side of my truck and looking at me in the driver's seat. And I also saw all the control panel in front of him, and I saw a human hand on a joystick with controls on it. So this was quite amazing, because very few people have ever reported having a UAP look like a plane on the inside. But this one did, with these big view screens. Well, he paced me all the way to Red Bank into my exit and then took off. And I was very excited about this, not knowing what it meant. Now, that was on the 11th of October, 1994. On the 23rd of October, just 12 days later, I wake up to go to the restroom. And as I'm rounding the bed for the bedroom door, I see all these flashes over my bed. Now, the room is completely dark except for the light from a clock radio. And I'm studying these flashes over the bed. And as I'm studying them, my mind becomes entrained to a strobe light that was pulsating about five times a second, which is, interestingly enough, hypnotic brainwave rate. And suddenly I get this big rectangular screen appearing in front of me, and I'm seeing these three astronauts floating in space on the other side of the screen. And I'm told telepathically to study the two humans. One was alien and two were humans. And I could see that they were wearing NASA-type decompression suits or space suits. And the man was on my right and the woman was in the middle. And they looked very familiar to me. And I was also told that if I go to the restroom, that when I come back, the vision will be over. Well, I studied them very carefully, and I thought that the woman looked a lot like my late wife, Bonnie, and the man looked a lot like me. And I thought this was strange, and I then had to go to the bathroom, and when I turned on the bathroom light, the whole room was flashing four to five times a second. It was very unnerving to have that strobe, and the strobe pattern gradually faded and disappeared. And when I came back to the bedroom, I woke my wife, who was sleeping underneath all of this, and she said, oh, you woke me in the middle of a dream. I said, I think I just was introduced to my ET children. And she said, oh, that's what I was dreaming about, that you were going to meet your ET children. And I said, oh, my God. I said, but they didn't tell me their names. And she said, well, in the dream, their names were Nora and Kyle. And
wow.
So that was really bizarre. Bonnie started – I mean, not Bonnie, Pat started to doubt my story that this really had happened, because she slept through it. And she went to work on Monday, and when she was coming home from work from New York City on a bus, she was had a window seat, and she saw this reflection of this woman in the bus window. She looked to her right, and there was nobody sitting there that resembled the image of the woman in the window. And the woman was had her hands folded in front of her and was smiling at Pat, and then said, "Hi, Pat, I'm Honora. Your husband is not going crazy. I am his daughter."
Wow.
And so when she got home, she was so excited. She ran in and hugged me and said, I met Honora. You're not going crazy. So I was very relieved at that point. But I had like in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the main actor has this image or vision of the Devil's Peak in Wyoming. I had this curious image in my mind that I had to go to Princeton University and look to see if my daughter was a student at Princeton University. Okay? Now,
right.
Why would I think this? Well, Bonnie had told me when she was alive that she had gone to Princeton University and graduated from Princeton, but she never went to college. So why would she tell me that, unless it was to give me a clue and get me to go to that university and look through their yearbooks, which I did. I figured that the two children, Nora and Kyle, were about 27 years old. That's the impression I had in my mind. So I figured that I would start at 1989, 1990, 91, and to see if I could go through those yearbooks and find a picture of her, which I did, and I didn't find a picture of her. Then something told me, go one more year. So I pulled out 1992 Princeton yearbook, and I started flipping through it. All of a sudden, when I get to the D's, there she was.
Wow.
Honora. But that wasn't her name in the yearbook. It was Tamara. And her birth date was different. But Bonnie had told me that she became pregnant when she was a virgin at age 17. And I had been abducted just a month before that, sperm sample. And then suddenly she tells me that, okay, she became pregnant. And she was afraid to tell her fiancé or her parents. They would want her to get an abortion, et cetera, et cetera. And her fiancé would drop her like a hot potato. He wanted to marry a virgin. And so she kept on getting bigger and bigger and kept on giving excuses that she was getting fat. And then suddenly on the 1st of August, 1967, she wakes up in bed and her belly is flat. There's blood between her legs and her hymen's broken, but there's no afterbirth or fetus in the bed sheets, which
Whoa.
Is a typical alien abduction. And so that's where I get the date of birth date from. But Tamara, who is the name of the girl in the 1992 yearbook, had a birth date of 28 June 1967, 33 days earlier, which
right.
I find very interesting. And she went to Rome postgraduate and then got married and then had five children and is still living in Ohio. But she doesn't want to believe any of this story. So I've just let her go on her own. I would love to get a DNA sample and to see if she really is related to me, because
absolutely, that would be incredible if that could possibly happen. That would certainly tell the story one way or the other, of course.
Yes, and it wouldn't interfere with her at this age, I'm sure, because her children are all grown up, probably out of the house, and she's you know, she would be in her 50s, mid-50s at this time. And what I'm concerned about is that here we have an example of ET involved in setting people up, bringing them together, called the Alien Love Bite by Eve Lorgan, and also involved in putting fertilized eggs into women, using them as surrogate mothers, and Tamara's mother was a surrogate mother, and Bonnie was the biological mother. And after I got back from Princeton, I made photocopies of a whole bunch of women in her yearbook and made a police lineup of photographs of women. And when Pat got home, I said, "Would you please look at these pictures and see if you recognize anybody?" Well, when she got to a picture of Tamara, she points to it and says, "I will never forget that face." And I said, "Is this the woman you saw the reflection in the window of the bus window?" She said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, that means that Tamara and Honora are identical twins born to two different mothers."
That's incredible. That is what an amazing alignment that is. Bruce, before we go on, I'm looking at the clock, and I just wanted to insert something here
for
our listeners out there. And that is that if our listeners would like to ask Bruce or myself a question, or would like to give a comment to us, either Bruce or myself, I'm going to give you my personal email address, and please go ahead and after the program or tomorrow, you can do that. We'd be very happy to take that. Again, my email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. I just wanted to have a way for our listeners to communicate with you, Bruce, or with me. So I just want to insert that.
Would you, could I give them my email address? It's pretty straightforward.
Oh, yeah, please do. I would. Yes, please.
Okay, it's Cornette Bruce, CORNETBRUCE, one word, at yahoo.com. That's it. It's Cornette Bruce at yahoo.com.
Excellent, excellent. And is there any other website, Bruce, that you'd like to give out?
Right now, go to YouTube / Bruce / Cornette, and you'll pull up my YouTube channel. And there's a lot of links in the descriptions for my various videos that they can click on and get access to my many, many websites.
I would just like to say that I've been there, and it's very much well done. Bruce, you did a great job with that, and I think it's fascinating, and I totally recommend that our listeners do that at some point. You'd find a lot of amazing material in there. I want to ask my producer, Hercules, if he could tell us how much time we have left for the program.
You have approximately 6 minutes.
6 minutes, okay. Bruce, I have about a 2 minute at the end I have to do, but few minutes left, if you could just, if there's anything you'd like to say in the, say a couple of minutes, please go ahead.
I want to reassure the audience that, you know, if you go back in past lives and find out who you were, you cannot take credit for anything that you did in a past life. It doesn't get transferred. In other words, you leave that in the grave of your previous life. So if I was Woodrow Wilson, nothing that I did or didn't do in that lifetime has any importance in this lifetime. My lifetime now is very different than it was back then. In fact, our astrology charts are mirror images of each other, all the distribution of planets and the sun and the moon. I mean, so much so that they are separated by houses that don't have any planets or stars in them. And it's quite clear that I am a very different person than I was back then. In fact, I would even go so far as to say I'm not political at all. I would not get back involved in politics in this lifetime.
It's a good points all for sure, and totally understood there. It's a fascinating subject, and Bruce, thank you so much for sharing your personal life and your personal experiences here. I think it's fascinating. I could see you doing a book on this. I actually could even see a movie being made of this extraordinary experiences. I think it would be an attractive vehicle for movie making, and I think it would get a great deal of reaction from it. There's a lot of important points here.
Yes. Well, one other, briefly, I'll say that I do not have any children by my own volition. That is, I was injured in baseball practice at age 13 during puberty, and put me on the operating table for 5 hours with a varicocele, a renal varicocele. And subsequent to that, I just have discovered that I'm not capable of having any children of my own. But amazingly, the ETs were able to unite my DNA with that of Bonnie to produce my 3 children. So I do have children, but I have not been allowed to raise them or know them personally. That's the only unfortunate aspect of this whole thing.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And again, Bruce, what an amazing program you've done tonight with me. I thank you so much for being my featured guest tonight, and I want you back, my friend. You've got an amazing story. I know there's more of them, and you are an amazing interviewer. And just thank you so much for being in the program.
Well, I hope that reading the my letter documenting all of this was adequate.
It was amazing. So I got to go to my interview now. This is Nick Curto for Disclosure Network New York, wishing you all an enlightened journey as you connect the dots to seek truth. Till next time, keep informed, stay safe, and be very, very kind to one another. Much love to everyone everywhere, not only on this planet, but far and wide. We are all part of an immense intergalactic family. In this vast master universe. So please remember that and act with love and compassion always. Good night, my friends. Till next time.
Thank you very much, Nick and Bruce, for an excellent show. And thanks to our wonderful audience for tuning in. Whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us. Wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and a healthy and happy new year. Thanks again.
Good night, everybody. Much love.